Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Definitely the attendance at ForkFest definitely did kick up again yesterday. It's getting hard to estimate how many people are on the campground at this point. Early on, it was like 24 maybe the first day, maybe 4 the second day. And I would say, we crossed over 100 yesterday.
Pretty close. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, of course, the Porcupine Freedom Festival expecting to clock in at about 1,200
between 11 and 12
attendees.
Is what we're looking at. I'm really excited about that. It's been a lot of work, but we're definitely making it happen.
So ForkFest is like an intimate prelude to the Porcupine Freedom Festival.
It's cooperation. I mean, it works out great because people who want to attend both events have that opportunity, and people who, for one reason or the other, only want to attend one have that opportunity as well.
Sure.
The kind that I'm going to attend both.
Go to
no
both.
No question about it.
Absolutely.
Will you be at the Beer Mile in the morning?
I will not be at the Beer Mile in the morning. No, sir.
You don't have to actually run. You can watch and cheer on the people.
Tomorrow's setup day, so I will be pretty crazy from sunup to sundown. Actually, way past sundown tomorrow.
So today's your last relatively easy day prior
to... Tents get here like 8 or 9 in the morning, and from that point on until...
Things start going wrong, and you've got to put out fires.
Last year was 1 o'clock in the morning when we finally got to bed. That's setup night, and then the next morning we had to be up at 7 to finish setting up. So that's just the way it's going to be.
Lots of cool stuff happening at ForkFest. You can go to porkfest.com to check that out. Yesterday, pretty easy day. You know, we did our broadcast, and then we ended up going out to dinner with you.
Yes, that was nice.
At the local restaurant that takes cryptocurrency
here. Old Bostonian.
Which was a smart move on her part to start taking cryptocurrency because the fact is, for 2 days of ForkFest, there was nobody cooking on the campsite.
I'd love to hear what Stephen and Derek's ratio is on how many no's to yeses
success,
and that sort of thing. Because, I mean, they're rocking, and they're basically the only ones doing that in Portsmouth. And they
so
are
sad.
Killing it.
It's amazing that they're able to do it all on their
45
own.
45 minutes from there. I would probably help them, but, you know, that's a long way for me. I usually only go there if I'm taking my wife out to dinner or something at Street, which takes, you know, Dash.
Well, and then go to the theater.
Right. And I'm so jealous too, because they're having so much fun with it. I mean, we've been there broadcasting from their store, the Free State Bitcoin Shop, which for listeners who are unfamiliar, you can actually walk into a little storefront. It's not much larger than this 10x10 tent right here or 12x, I don't know what this is, but it's not much larger. It's just a little one-room shop. And they have just the coolest little, you know, gadgets and trinkets and, you know, Bitcoin necklaces
and great
T-shirts.
Shirts. The shirts are great.
Posters, Doge pillows, which are always sold out.
My son has one of those Doge pillows.
That they only accept Dogecoin for?
They only take Doge for, So you have to pay with cryptocurrency in order to actually buy anything in the store. And it's just such a smart outreach tool. Because, you know, you literally are getting people just off the street who have
questions.
Well,
the two times that I've been there, both times someone has set up their very first crypto wallet while I
while
was
you were
the
there. Isn't
that
fun to watch that?
It's fantastic. One of them was a kid of probably 15.
Yep.
You know, just a young kid. It was great.
Roger, you're from Arkansas originally. You were a very active person in the Arkansas Libertarian Party. You were, in fact, I believe the chairman for some time.
I was the chair for two terms. My wife was the chair for a term. I also was the secretary and the first district rep. I did a lot of things for the party.
And what happened down there? I mean, why did you get burned out?
I mean, you know, I banged my head against the wall for many, many years. Got ballot access, full ballot access for the first time in Arkansas history for the Libertarian Party.
Nice.
It cost us $50,000 to do it.
And so what was involved in that other than, like, spending money to pay petitioners?
That's what it was, basically. It was $50,000 of paying petitioners to get about 16,000, 17,000 signatures. So it was, you know, so we're already starting way behind the R's and the D's because we're spending so much money to get on the ballot to even, you know, get started in the race.
Right.
And we did that, ran like 30 candidates, and then won one uncontested race for constable out of all of that.
Is that so, like sheriff?
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
It's lower than sheriff.
Well, you're right. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's for basically counties that don't have a sheriff or areas that don't have a sheriff. It's a fill-in kind of thing. And that was the only win that we got. It's like, well, why are we wasting our time? So we do it again 2 years later. We pay $30,000 that time to get on the ballot. And then, again, we win no elections. It's like, why are we doing this?
Just throw some more money down a hole.
Exactly.
Set it on fire while you're at it.
And that's why we started looking at another vehicle for us to do our activism. And, you know, we'd heard about the Free State Project for years, followed it on the internet, but it's cold up there. How would I ever do that, right?
This year in New Hampshire, we actually have, for the first time ever, according to Daryl,
a contested gubernatorial primary for the libertarians.
I'm excited about that. That's great. That's great.
And I hear Daryl might be throwing a debate.
Oh, nice.
I will be working on organizing something. There's also going to be a
something
debate.
Like a debate?
Yeah.
Where both candidates talk to each other?
Yes.
Thing? Okay.
That'll be interesting because I know both of them fairly well, and I know their positions, so that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And then I believe there's plans to have a debate of some sort at the special LP business convention coming up at the end of July.
Because only special people would want to attend something like that.
Right, where all you're dealing with is platform and bylaws. And
right, then there were some platform things that we didn't get to during the regular convention. There were the bylaws changes that we didn't get to. And the new chair decided that we need to have, or actually somebody else recommended having a special convention. That passed, and he was like, all right, let's have it in July.
Well, I know he couldn't see my face at the convention, but I'm sure you could. Dude, that drove me insane.
All the bylaw stuff?
Yes, because people were just getting drugged into the menu.
And that's that, all that ever happens.
We have 14 pages of changes. We've got 10 more minutes. Motion to just adopt everything. I mean, and the motion failed because it would have closed the primary.
Conventions are where the Libertarian Party goes to die.
I have no experience with Democrats or Republicans as far as their meetings are concerned, so they may be just as bad.
They are.
I don't know, because we actually had a Democrat that came to, actually a couple of them, that came to the Libertarian Convention.
Oh, yeah,
and Colin Van Ostern, former elected official,
right,
hoping to run for Secretary of State. And we've got this really weird process by which that happens in New Hampshire. But he came up to me during lunch and he said, you know, it's very interesting the way your process works out, because the Democrats are really good about making sure that debate doesn't happen.
Mm.
He said that their process is set up to where there's basically no opportunity for anyone to debate the proposals.
So basically they get their way.
There's no way for floor amendments.
Wow.
It is, here's the proposal.
So it's total top-down control is what
you can discuss goods and bads of the proposal for a very brief time, and then we vote, and there's no opportunity to amend the proposal.
So he was actually complimenting the Libertarians.
Yes.
saying that your process is better because you allow anybody to talk about things.
Right. Well, you actually allow the members of the party to participate.
Yeah, it is more fair. For sure, and I definitely agree with that. But again,
it's grueling.
It is, especially like Daryl was talking about, when you get two parliamentarians that are interpreting Robert's rules differently.
With Keenvention, unlike you guys, you got 70 volunteers or 100 volunteers for this huge event. This was just a one-room hotel convention kind of thing. Only one track, you know, not multiple tracks for people. So you either were in the room watching what was going on, or you were out of the room hanging out with people.
Right.
So, you know, one choice or the other. It kept it real simple. You didn't have to deal with crazy juggling of people canceling and having to replace or whatever.
Which is something that we would deal with all week this week, absolutely.
So you have 250 events.
Yeah, right at 250 events over 5 days. Yeah. And, you know, of course, invariably, there's going to be people that either show up late or don't come at all or whatever the case may be. So we're juggling it all week long.
And that happened to an extent at Keenvention, but not a large extent. Yeah. And it was no problem to say, oh, so-and-so can't make it. Just come on up on a panel. Because we had enough people there to where most people were willing to step in.
And I really like the way the way Keenvention was, to where here is the event that's happening.
Right, the one thing.
It's a lot easier to organize and coordinate.
Yep.
When I was at the Omaha Unconvention a few weeks ago.
You said there were too many tracks, right?
They had like 4 or 5 different things at any one time.
And that's how Porkfest is this year. We have, there's almost no hour that doesn't have 4 or 5 events.
Right,
and some even have
Porkfest has like 1,200 people.
Right.
This thing had like 1 to 2.
Oh, yeah, that's way too much. Way too much. Well, Keenvention sounds very similar to how we do in the Free Coast. We do the Free Coast Festival every year. It's one track. If you want to come to that event, you do. If you don't, you know, whatever. I love Monero. I love some of these other, you know, privacy coins. But as far as day-to-day use, Dash is absolutely king. And that's why we're thrilled to have Dash as our biggest sponsor for Porkfest. Because
really?
They can be used every day. Yeah, they give us a huge amount of money. They're our biggest sponsor.
Now, was that a proposal that was made to Dash?
It was, yeah. Joel Valenzuela,
of course, did that.
And so they did Liberty Forum. They're doing Porkfest as well.
So what are they getting? Is it just branding, banners? I mean,
they're getting branding. They're getting stuff in the swag bag. They're getting several different speeches they can do. They're getting an Agora Valley spot. They're getting a lot for their money. They're also getting one of our awesome cabins
cool.
in the hotel room. So they're getting a lot, but they're also bringing a lot of value. I mean, Ben Swan is coming on Dash's dollar through that sponsorship.
Wow.
So that's how we got Ben Swan for no cost of Porkfest,
which
is fantastic.
Nice.
Dash has been great to us for sure.
Yeah, and that's the thing that, of course, Dash has, and they're not currently sponsoring Free Talk Live, but we're going to see if we can get them back on board. We actually have a proposal in right now, but it's that proposal process that sets Dash apart from, say, Bitcoin or Bitcoin Cash. And there's nothing wrong with Bitcoin Cash. It's a fine cryptocurrency, but it was based on Bitcoin, so it doesn't have the features that Dash has, where 10% of the mining rewards with Dash go into this promotional budget. And it's not just used for advertising. Sometimes they'll pay their core team and their programmers and things like that. So, but portion of that budget should be used and generally is used on advertising Dash. You were in IT down south.
Right. I was a network administrator, a network manager at the time when I left down south, and I was kind of stuck in a rut in a position I couldn't grow with. So Jess and I, my wife, were looking at moving, and we were looking at Austin. There's a great libertarian contingent in Austin, and most of those guys were our friends. Yeah. They were great friends of ours anyway, so we looked there, and then we seriously started looking at New Hampshire for the first time, and it became more and more attractive the more we looked at it, and so, you know, found a great position up here. They flew me up for the weekend, put me up in their beach house in Maine, right on the beach. Yeah. It was gorgeous. And we were here for 24 hours before we knew, one way or the other, we're going to be here. Yeah. There's no question. And we have never had any doubts about it ever since.
Austin's a fine city to
visit.
It is.
Yeah.
It's too big.
Well, I love the artsiness of it.
Texas is too damn big.
Yeah. I love the artsiness of Austin. It's a great town for that kind of thing. And it's a great town to raise your kids. But, you know, it's got a huge police presence. It's very leftist.
Huge. And it's in Texas.
And it's in Texas, which is hot. I lived in Texas for a year when I was a kid. It is ridiculously hot.
Daryl lived in San Antonio, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I did. And, you know, it's really difficult being an anti-war activist living in a city with 5 military bases.
Right.
Wow. You do a podcast. Actually, you do multiple podcasts. You've got the Star Wars one and
Resist
the
Empire and the Lava Flow.
And you've actually not been on Resist the Empire.
I have not. I've been
while.
Really busy working on Porkfest. So I've had to
kind of
get
a co-host
back.
Holding it down?
Well, I had a co-host, and now he's got a friend of ours who is also a big Star Wars nerd as well. And they're actually doing a really great job. So we may leave it at that for a while because they're doing great together.
But you're still doing Lava Flow.
I am still doing the Lava Flow. We also have a
weekly.
Brand new one on the weekly. A brand new one that's actually a supporter of this show. James Davis and his wife do One Free Family for me, a new take on peaceful parenting.
We added them to LRN.fm.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite new podcasts.
He's great.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
I was glad to hear that he got into it because I know he's been a longtime Free Talk Live supporter and listener. And when he came up here, he was regretting not moving to the Keene area because he wanted to come on Free Talk Live and join us as kind of like a co-host there. And that's how we are. You know, hey, if you can come out and you love being on Free Talk Live, then come on out and be on the show. But glad to hear he actually got behind the microphone and started his own thing.
Yeah, and he and his wife are great. I mean, they've got
great rapport.
They do. And I've learned so much from not only them, other people in the Free Coast area, but primarily I've learned so much from these guys on you know, how to do the peaceful parenting because it's brand new to me. I mean, I was raised by an authoritarian father. I started off the first couple of years.
Did you get spanked?
I did. Oh, yes, did I ever. And I started off being a fairly authoritarian father, not nearly as bad as mine, before I found peaceful parenting. Ian, we're friends. I would not go up to you and say, clean your room or I'm going to give you a spanking. Of course, I would never do that to you. Why would I do that to my child?
Right. Now, all right, here's another
now,
one.
Now, are there video games involved? Because then Ian might like the spanking.
So here's another one. This one I got from Mark when we've talked with peaceful parents before. So Mark used to live by a road, which is fairly busy, and I guess he still does. But, you know, his son could, in theory, at age 2 or 3 or whatever, toddle on down the long driveway to get right next to the state road and then run out into traffic. Should Mark intervene and grab his son to forcibly prevent him from walking into traffic?
Absolutely. And one of the things that always bothered me about the non-aggression principle, for example, was that issue. And I have a friend who kind of walked me through how she handled that. Mm-hmm. So if your kid is walking out on the street and the car is coming, you're going to snatch your child up and you could possibly break their arm when you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Have you violated the NAP? Yes. Do you owe recompense for that? Yes. You're going to pay to fix your child's broken arm. Of course. Should your child be able to seek higher reparations? Well, sure, if they choose to. I don't think they would. You should just save their life. You know. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of nuance in that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, there's no question.
And
I would absolutely
you mentioned the NAP, which is the non-aggression principle. Right. And there are various different ways to say what that is.
Right.
And I like the definition that mentions nobody having the right to initiate or cause unjust harm.
Should we talk about tacos, guys?
Let's talk about tacos, because didn't somebody post in the forum they were going to have Taco Fest at Forkfest?
Yes, Tuesday.
I thought he was starting sooner than that.
Oh, was it?
Because he said he was going to be having some tacos during Forkfest.
Oh, it was, because he was going to walk around having
walking
mobile
tacos.
Or something.
Was it mobile?
Right,
it was. I didn't read that part.
He said walking tacos, and we were trying
to
figure out.
Sean Beck. They're happening now.
They're happening
now. All right.
I'll have to stop and get one.
I'll look for that later on.
I don't know what differentiates a walking taco from a regular taco?
Because he's walking around with a
microphone. He's answering, but I can't hear it. You don't have headphones on. He's answering your question, but I can't hear what he's saying, Daryl.
Right, I can hear what he's saying. He says it's served in a Doritos bag.
Oh, interesting.
With Doritos in the bag?
Okay. Yes.
That's fascinating. I got to check that out.
Yeah, so that's how it is more mobile.
Cool. Yeah, so I love the food options at these places, especially when people don't ask government permission in order to serve other people.
Now, hopefully these walking tacos at Taco Fest, at Fork Fest, are not someone's amputated leg.
Right, because that apparently happened, according to Vice.com, which is where you'd expect to see a story like this.
No, I'd expect to see a story like this from The Onion. Let me try to ask a different line of questions here. Would you try ape?
Would I try? I don't know.
Or do you draw the line at primate?
I think that I would draw the line at Homo sapien. I think that that's where I would draw. I mean, if there were ape in front of me, I think I would have to take a bite just to try it and see.
If we went and found a Sasquatch and killed a Sasquatch.
If Sasquatch existed, which it is not.
You don't know. You've never
something
seen
else
one.
You disagree with Daryl about.
I've never seen a moose, but I'm guessing that moose are actually real.
I've never seen a flying monkey on the dark side of the moon, so I can't say that they don't exist, but they don't exist, Daryl. I mean, come on.
They were in
the We would have evidence of by now of Sasquatch if they really existed.
But still, let's just say that, you know, somebody finds a Sasquatch and they kill it and they barbecue it here at Pork Fest. Would you eat it?
I would try a bite, yes, because then you're still not a Homo sapien.
What if somebody found a 100% Neanderthal?
It's still not Homo sapien.
All right, let's move on.
I'm drawing the line at Homo sapien.
Hold on. So what if it's 4% Neanderthal?
I'm drawing the line at Homo sapien.
So I am 96% Homo sapien, 4% Neanderthal.
Cut off a piece. Let's try it.
So if you could taste human flesh in an ethical way, would you? Asks Vice. It's the kind of question you ask after watching Silence of the Lambs Stoned. No matter how you respond, you never expect anyone to actually hold you to your answer. So tomorrow you're going to be doing the Beer Mile. You got a few other athletic things that you've got going on, but that's the one that we've been talking about the most.
Yes.
After running a mile today with you, I cannot imagine stopping and four times and having what you've got to stop every quarter mile and have
so
a beer.
So you run a quarter mile, you down a beer. You run a quarter mile, you down a beer, you run a quarter mile, and then you down the final beer.
Have you ever done one of these before?
I have not.
What's the over-under on how many of the participants puke when it's over?
It's got to be more than half.
So there's a rule in Beer Mile. There are official Beer Mile rules.
Wow.
And one of the rules is if you vomit, you run a penalty lap. It doesn't matter. Hold on.
Wait. A whole mile or one
quarter mile?
Quarter mile. It doesn't matter how many times you vomit, you only run one penalty lap.
Oh, well, that's nice.
The official Beer Mile rules do not specify if someone does not consume their beer. So I have added my own caveat of if you don't want to drink any beers, then you run a penalty lap for each beer that you do not consume.
So up to 2 miles.
So you can run 2 miles and not drink anything.
Mm. Continuing from Vice.com, where a man had his foot shattered after a car hit his bike. So he was on the bike, sent him careening into a nearby forest. His foot was shattered to the point where he could not ever walk on it again. So he decided to amputate, and the doctor asked him, when the doctor asked him if he wanted to amputate, he asked if he could keep it.
That's fascinating to me. I worked in, I was a surgical attendant right out of high school where I worked in surgery, and they would amputate, obviously, a lot of gangrenous legs or things like that. And I remember, you know, the doctors were very protective of those limbs. Mm. And I remember walking through the hospital, taking one of these, I was wrapped up in the blue tape and the blue paper and all of that. And I'm literally walking through the hospital corridor with this, obviously, what's a leg? It's the shape of a leg, right, in this blue paper, taking it to the morgue so they can dispose of it properly. I'm just walking through the hospital hallway, passing people with this leg in my hand.
There it is.
It was really funny.
They point out here they had a party on Sunday with 10 of his friends, and they ate fancy foods and then had, for their final course, the fajita tacos made from the man's severed human limb. And he's not using his real name here. He's called Shiny.
Of course not.
and we'll go on here. The United States does not have a federal law banning cannibalism. They talk about how in 49 states, with the exception of Idaho, it's pretty much legal, as long as it's consensual, obviously. Chinese, however, is the rare case where cannibalism was not only legal but also ethical. He documented the entire process, but due to the graphic nature of the photos, we've omitted several from this post, and then they link to those. We asked the 38-year-old why he decided to feed himself to his friends, what he tasted like, and how the experience changed him.
And this is a stateless wedding, yeah. So no government paperwork.
As you would expect.
How does that work? I mean, is it still going to be recognized by the government?
Probably not.
New Hampshire has a very strange common law of marriage recognition to where if a couple is together living as spouses for a period of at least 3 years, once one of these spouses dies, then the state recognizes it.
Oh,
really? So it's only recognized for inheritance purposes.
So you can't get the tax benefits or things like that from it.
Not immediately, yeah, I guess.
That's interesting.
Right, and, well, there's not really a state income tax
that you would require.
Does the federal government require a state-issued marriage license? That's a completely different question.
To get the marriage deduction, yeah, absolutely you would.
So what about the states that allow for common law marriage where just you live together for a period of years?
In Arkansas, we call that cousins, so I'm not exactly sure, to be honest. Sorry.
I've got a fairly rare blood type. I'm AB positive, which means that somebody else that's AB positive, they could basically get anybody's kidney, but you, from, you know, like the standpoint of the people that actually wind up doing the matching, it's best if you have an exact match instead of, oh, let's give this person that's AB positive and A positive, and then, well, we've got somebody that's A positive that doesn't have a kidney now.
Yep. And I'm O positive, so I can give blood to anybody who's positive. Yeah. So I presume organs too.
Yeah, I could take all of your organs and your blood.
That's just awesome.
This is one of those issues. I mean, now that we're talking about organ donation and/or sales, this is one of those issues that doesn't come up very often. When
I did a full episode of the Lava Flow on it, just because it was a topic that and that's why I started my show, is because I wanted to learn more about some of these topics. Yeah. And I knew I would force myself to really dig deep to do my episodes.
Well, why is it prohibited in the first place? I mean, what's their excuse?
It's
for
a moral issue. You know, they don't want, you know, because, you know, I could pay $20,000 for his organ, but I would lose out if somebody pays $50,000, for example.
See, what I had always heard is the reason it's illegal is, well, we can't just have people going around stabbing people and stealing their kidneys.
Well, that's
that you wake up in your bathtub full of ice and somebody's stolen your kidney. Right. That's the old story.
Let's go back to the discussion that we had earlier, if we can, about the not voting and complying with government regulations and paying taxes, etc.
Right.
You know, if people are still paying their taxes because they like what the government is doing, or if they're paying taxes because they fear going to jail, or if they vote because they truly support whatever proposal, or they're voting in self-defense, does it make a difference what the positions are as long as there's some level of something that is deemed as compliance?
Well, I mean, there is definitely coercion involved. The only reason that I pay any amount of taxes is because I don't want to go to jail. I mean, obviously, I have a family to support and take care of. And being the sole breadwinner, well, before this week, I feel like I have to comply. And it's definitely forced, so there's no question about it.
Right.
Because otherwise, I would never voluntarily give my money to build bombs and guns and these kind of things in the hands of madmen. There's no question. However, I am working on things to, you know, limit that that exposure, similar to what Mark does. And well, I know you with the Sheriff Free Church. Limit your exposure to those taxes, and I'm certainly working on that. And I think that anybody who is a libertarian should, in some form or fashion, be working on limiting that tax exposure, because we have to starve the beast.
We did a 420 yesterday, which I don't know. I mean, I don't remember the last time it happened at Pork Fest as sort of a thing, but back in the day, there was like a progression, Roger. You're relatively new to this whole thing, even though you're organizing and doing what appears to be a quite capable job of organizing Pork Fest. Your numbers are up. The ticket sales are up significantly from last year. But I remember in the early days of Pork Fest, there was certainly a lot of cannabis that was used, but it didn't really come out until like maybe like a year or two into the years that I had gone there, and then people started to sort of like come out into public, and they'd be on the sidewalks here, and they'd gather, and we started gathering together at 4:20,
or leaving a big bag on your picnic table.
Yeah, so
that
we did
may or may not have ever happened.
And so now, you know, we brought Rich over here, gave him the microphone yesterday at 4:20, and he announced, as he normally does, with what I would call the invocation that he likes to say, and it says, "We smoke these in remembrance of lost liberties and in hopes for a day when the people do not fear their government because the government fears the people. Smoke them if you got them."
That's great.
And
I love
so
that.
He did the invocation and put on his playlist, and we all hung out for like a solid hour. So the big question here is, how did it taste? He says it was beefy, super beefy, and said it had a pronounced beefy flavor to it. The muscle he cut was tough and chewy. It tasted good, but the experience wasn't the best. So admitting that, you know, if you're going to be eating meat, you probably want to stay away from human meat, but they tried it, and it was ethically done because, again, everybody agreed to it, his 10 friends that accompanied him with this meal. And I imagine they weren't, you know, thick tacos because you probably can't get a whole lot of meat out of that. But anyway, he says, question from Vice. You said on Reddit, one friend had to spit me into a napkin. What was the rest of the meal like? He said, there was this queasy anticipation. We all looked at each other like, we're doing this, right? We're doing this. There was a very dark humor, which we all already have in spades. I think that's why this went so well. We were cracking jokes the whole time. I said at one point, well, today was the day I was inside 10 of my friends at once.
No innuendo there. That's fantastic.
How long before that ends up on Cards Against Humanity?
Right. Oh, my goodness.
There was that one story years ago where, and I think you said it was Germany.
I think it was out of Germany.
Where somebody actually consented to be slaughtered.
Right.
Yeah, and I think this article mentioned it about
it
somebody
did.
Eating
it
a guy consensually.
And that the dude went to prison for 8.5 years because of it. So it didn't matter how well he documented the fact that his victim was actually willing.
So I wonder if the victim himself, if he had killed himself instead of the person killing him, I wonder if that would have been more ethical. I don't know.
Well,
that would have
my understanding of that case is it was one of those things of he was slowly killed and consumed. So, like, they
over
ate
time.
His leg one day. Like, they jointly.
God. Can you imagine?
No,
hey, Roger,
I don't want
me
to.
And you are going to share my leg
right
now.
No, we're not.
Now.
No, we're not. Couldn't pay me
so
enough.
It was obviously somebody who was a real sicko who was into pain big time on his own, you know. I want to be in pain, and I want you to eat me.
Right. It reminds me of the Hannibal Lecter movie where the guy has the top of his head cut off at the end, and he's eating part of the brain
and
while the guy's alive. I mean, you know, that's fascinating.
Whoa, wait, what?
Oh, yeah, one of the Hannibal Lecter movies. I think it was Hannibal.
The
been Red
one,
Dragon.
Yeah, the second one.
It was
one
of them.
I've not seen any of them.
Yeah, at the very end of that. It was the one where Clarice Starling was replaced with what's-her-name instead of the first person who played her. But it was a fascinating movie. But yeah, at the end, and it's in the book as well, he's got his head, the top of his head cut off, and he's just, you know, scooping part of his brain out and eating him while the guy's sitting there alive and having a conversation.
I think it was Washington State was where we reported on Phoenix Jones. You ever heard of this guy?
No.
So there's the real life superhero movement.
Yes.
Oh, I have seen this guy, yes.
He wears yellow and black.
Right, yes.
And he's got like a whole superhero spandex kind of outfit.
Yeah, he's nuts.
That he wears. Oh, yeah.
He's absolutely nuts.
And he'll go around and, you know, walk the streets. I think it's Seattle.
And he carries like a stick or something, doesn't he? Or he carried some sort of a weapon at one point.
I'm sure he did.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't carry a gun or anything, but he carried some sort of a stick or something, a baton.
Right. And so he was making the news. I don't know. This must have been the end of the last decade when he was in the headlines because, you know, he dresses funny and he goes out and he ostensibly fights crime. And, of course, the police always have the viewpoint of, well, we don't think you, right. Don't take the law into your own hands. Right. Well, you know, and so I don't know how much crime he's actually stopped, because usually when you hear about Phoenix Jones, it's because he's gotten into a fight with somebody.
Right.
And apparently, and I think it's Washington State, where this is the case, the police will actually referee a fight.
No way.
A consensual fight. So there's video of Phoenix Jones having a square-off fight with somebody on the streets in front of like a bar in downtown Seattle or wherever this is. And there's two cops standing there
watching
the fight happen.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more. All for free at freetalklive.com.